Namaste Sarasvati, Gauravani Pacharni, Nirvishesha Shunya, Vani Pashtacharya Sitarani. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Today we're reading the introduction to the very beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam. As was mentioned, we finished the entire Bhagavatam, finishing the last verse of the 12th canto on Friday, on the auspicious day of Bhadra Purnima. And for those of you who haven't heard, Bhadra Purnima is a very auspicious day for distributing the Srimad Bhagavatam. And we had a big campaign, and what did we end up with, 52 or 54 sets? 55 full sets of Srimad Bhagavatam. So very nice, we really appreciate that. So that was a wonderful way to end our journey through the Bhagavatam. It happened to coincide on that day. So we've covered 18,000 verses. As is mentioned, it took over 20 years here in Alachua to go through verse by verse. If you calculate 18,000 verses, if you did, you know, we do 5 days a week. If you did, you know, that'd be 3 to 4 verses per day to cover 18,000, you know, because some are, don't have purports and some have, you know. So it does take a long time to go through this. Also, another thing is that we finished the 13th chapter of the 10th canto in 2010. That was the last purports that Srila Prabhupada was able to translate and write commentaries before he left this world. So it's been 9 years since we've been relishing Srila Prabhupada's purports, and we covered some very, very important material throughout the whole 10th canto of Krishna's pastimes, the 11th canto, the Uddhava Gita, 23 chapters of really incredible information there, 12th canto, we heard about Kali Yuga and so many other things. But now we are back to the beginning, and back to Srila Prabhupada's writings. So we're going to begin the first canto, and we're going to spend a little extra time in the beginning. So yesterday we had a nice class by Nagaraj who read the preface, and today I'm going to read the introduction. Then we start with the first verse. We're actually going to have 3 days, because on the first verse and a couple days on the second and a couple days on the third, because there's such very long purports. Srila Prabhupada puts so much of his heart and his realizations in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, and so we're going to carefully study it, you know, to try to gain that very, very important knowledge. Okay, so just because the students weren't here, and just to quickly review, yesterday we read the preface, and Nagaraj gave a nice class going through it practically line by line. And one of the things in that preface that Prabhupada was emphasizing was the importance of Srimad Bhagavatam. In other words, as you often do in a preface, the author is stating why they're writing the book, right? In other words, what's the purpose of it? We know that Srila Prabhupada spent so much of his life translating and writing commentaries in English of the Bhagavatam. Of course, this was the instruction of a spiritual master to preach in English. And we remember that he would spend hours every night, late at night, writing, because it was the time he wasn't disturbed, and spent years and years writing the Srimad Bhagavatam, right up to practically the very last day of his life. He was still translating purports. Translating and writing purports. So why was it so important? He answers that in the preface. It says there's a need for a common cause. People are looking for something in common, something to unite them, something to achieve peace. And Prabhupada says, admits that while modern civilization has materially advanced in many ways, the standard of living is much better for people perhaps than it used to be. It says still something is missing. Prabhupada said there's a pinprick in society. A pinprick, you know, you're feeling like you might be feeling very happy, but there's a pinprick, something like you have a thorn or something, you can't really be happy. So people are not happy despite their material advancement. They need something beyond the material to satisfy people. People need a spiritual solution to life's problems. And Prabhupada says that the Srimad Bhagavatam is what will fulfill that need. One of his nice quotes, he says, it's a cultural presentation for the re-spiritualization of entire human society. Then Prabhupada talks about how Srimad Bhagavatam is ultimately the source of all knowledge. When one understands Bhagavatam, we know the source of everything, we know our relationship to him, and we know what is our duty in human society. And then Prabhupada concludes in the preface saying that we must read very cautiously and proceed systematically through the first 9 cantos before approaching the 10th canto, which of course is Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. So he says we don't want to jump to the 10th canto, but to carefully study step by step. And that's what, of course, Prabhupada instructed us to do, and that's why it's taken us so many years, because we do study systematically, verse by verse, to fully understand, or at least the best we can, try to understand who Krishna is, what is our relationship to Krishna, and what is the goal of life. Therefore, we're ready to enter into Krishna's pastimes. Okay, now we're going to go to the introduction. It's about 2.5 pages. I'm going to read through the whole thing, so be a little patient. I like to get the whole flow of Prabhupada's presentation. I don't like to break it up too much, because then sometimes you don't really see where Prabhupada's going and how he really does a wonderful exposition of his points, and he comes back to his points and really elucidates them. So, pay attention. We're reading the introduction. It's on the screen, right? Okay. The conception of God and the conception of the absolute truth are not on the same level. Note that, because Prabhupada's going to talk about that. Conception of God and absolute truth are not on the same level. The Srimad Bhagavatam hits on the target of the absolute truth. The conception of God indicates the controller, whereas the conception of the absolute truth indicates the summum bonum, or the ultimate source of all energies. There's no difference of opinion about the personal feature of God as the controller, because a controller cannot be impersonal. Of course, modern government, especially democratic government, is impersonal to some extent, but ultimately the chief executive head is a person, and the impersonal feature of government is subordinate to the personal feature. So without a doubt, whenever we refer to control over others, we must admit the presence or the existence of a personal feature. Because there are different controllers for different managerial positions, there may be many small gods. According to the Bhagavad Gita, any controller who has a specific extraordinary power is called a vibhutimat sattva, or a controller empowered by the Lord. There are many vibhutimat sattvas, controllers or gods with various specific powers, but the absolute truth is one without a second. The Srimad Bhagavatam designates the absolute truth, or summum bonum, is the Param Satyam. The author of Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Vyasadeva, first offers his respectful obeisances unto the Param Satya, absolute truth. And because the Param Satya is the ultimate source of all energies, the Param Satya is the supreme person. The gods or the controllers are undoubtedly persons, but the Param Satya, from whom the gods derive powers of control, is the supreme person. The Sanskrit word Ishvara, controller, conveys the import of God. But the Supreme Person is called Parameshvara, or the Supreme Ishvara. The Supreme Person, or Parameshvara, is the Supreme Conscious Personality, and because he does not derive any power from any other source, he is supremely independent. In the Vedic literatures, Brahma is described as the Supreme God, or the head of all other gods like Indra, Chandra, and Varuna, but the Srimad Bhagavatam confirms that even Brahma is not independent as far as his power and knowledge are concerned. He received knowledge in the form of the Vedas from the Supreme Person who resides within the heart of every living being. That Supreme Personality knows everything directly and indirectly. Individual infinitesimal persons who are parts and parcels of the Supreme Personality may know directly and indirectly everything about their bodies or external features, but the Supreme Person knows everything about both his external and internal features. The word Janmadyasya suggests that the source of all production, maintenance, or destruction is the same Supreme Conscious Person. Even in our present experience, we can know that nothing is generated from an inert matter, but inert matter can be generated from the living entity. For instance, by contact with living entity, the material body develops into a working machine. Men with a poor fund of knowledge mistake the bodily machinery to be the living being, but the fact is the living being is the basis of the bodily machine. The bodily machine is useless as soon as the living spark is away from it. Similarly, the original source of all material energy is the Supreme Person. This fact is expressed in all the Vedic literatures, and all the exponents of spiritual science have accepted this truth. The living force is called Brahman, and one of the greatest acharyas, teachers, namely Sripad Shankaracharya, has preached that Brahman is substance, whereas the cosmic world is category. The original source of all energy is the living force, and he is logically accepted as the Supreme Person. He is therefore conscious of everything past, present, and future, and also of each corner of his manifestation, both material and spiritual. An imperfect living being does not even know what is happening with his own personal body. He eats his food, but does not know how this food is transformed into energy, or how it maintains his body, sustains his body. When a living being is perfect, he is aware of everything that happens, and since the Supreme Person is all perfect, it is quite natural that he knows everything in all detail. Consequently, the perfect personality is addressed in the Srimad Bhagavatam as Vasudeva, as one who lives everywhere in full consciousness and in full possession of his complete energy. All this is clearly explained in Srimad Bhagavatam, and the reader has ample opportunity to study this critically. I'm actually going to stop there. I'm not going to do what I said because I think it's too much information. There's another page here or so, but this is a logical stopping point, and then he probably goes into a different concept. So I think that's enough for now. A lot of ideas here, very, very important, very deep philosophy being spoken. So let's look at this a little bit. The first thing Prabhupada talks about is the difference between the conception of God and the conception of the absolute truth. Prabhupada quotes this phrase, Param Satyam, or absolute truth. And you'll notice there are two phrases that Prabhupada uses here, Sanskrit phrases, Param Satyam and Janmadisha Yata. Now, both of these come from the very first verse of the Bhagavatam, and that's why Prabhupada is quoting them. It's kind of tying into the beginning. So the very first words of the Bhagavatam are Janmadisha Yata, which basically means that Krishna is the cause of creation, maintenance, and destruction of all the manifested universes, that he is the supreme. And Param Satya, at the end, the last line is Param Satya Dimahi. Dimahi means I offer my obeisances to that Param Satya, or absolute truth. Param means supreme, Satya means truth. Okay? So, when we talk about God, we usually refer to the controller of everything, or the creator. But Prabhupada is saying the absolute truth is a little broader concept. Certainly Krishna is God, but the absolute truth of Paramasatya is the source of all energies, not just the energy of control, but all energies, such as knowledge. You know, we have different, Krishna has so many different energies, which we'll talk about. But God or Krishna certainly is the supreme controller, but he's the supreme controller as a supreme person. And that's a point that Prabhupada is making here. We don't want to mistake that, you know, that Krishna is not a person. In fact, now in Prabhupada's discussion here, he clarifies two mistakes that people often make when they're thinking about God or thinking about the controller Ishvara, especially the supreme person. The first is that people don't understand as a personal and an impersonal aspect or feature of God. But the primary identity, the original identity, is personal. In other words, the person doesn't come from some impersonal energy, rather it's the other way around. Krishna's the original person, and one of his energies, the Brahman energy manifesting from him, is impersonal. The second is that there may be many small controllers, and some people think that they're God, but the Param Satyam is the supreme controller, the Parameshvara, over all the others. So we'll talk about those two ideas. So Bhagavatam, throughout the Bhagavatam, clearly establishes the personal form of God. This is one of the things that Bhagavatam does very, very clearly throughout all of the cantos. Over and over again, we're hearing that Krishna is the supreme personality, the supreme form. In fact, Prabhupada often calls Krishna the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He doesn't just say the Supreme God, or he says Personality of Godhead, phrase that Prabhupada often used. So why? Because this is so important to understand that God is a person. We are persons, God is a person, and we have a personal relationship with God. And that is developed throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam. Now he gives a couple examples. Prabhupada gives two examples in this introduction of how we can understand that God is a person. The first example or analogy, you might say, the analogy is to the government. He says the government has an impersonal and a personal feature. Now what does that mean? Okay, think about laws. If I'm driving and I go through a red light and I get stopped and I get a ticket, that law is kind of impersonal, isn't it? I don't know where the law came from. It's sort of just like some energy of the government, you know. In other words, there are laws that are there, but it's somewhat impersonal. I don't ascribe that. I don't say, you know, oh, that was so-and-so's law. No, it's just a general law. Or if there's different things we have to do, if you're filling out a tax form, you know. So these things, like these forms and laws, they're all impersonal manifestations, but they are manifestations of a person. Where do those laws come from? Did they just appear? No. Isn't there there's a legislature, there's some body of government that enacts these laws? And then what about the enforcement of those laws? So that was a person, a policeman, who stopped me, right? In other words, so the enactment of laws and all of these different things, which may seem impersonal, ultimately there's a person behind them. So Krishna has this impersonal feature of Brahman, but the personal features behind that and supreme. Now the second example is given here is the body, how the life force animates the body. And Prabhupada makes the point that life does not come from matter, but rather the presence of the soul activates material energy, causes the body to grow, causes everything to happen, come into existence. So when you think about it, you were born as a baby, right? Now you're growing. Does it happen that you grow to a certain point and then you become alive? Does the body have to grow to a certain point before you become alive? At what point were you alive? Very beginning, right? The life, in other words, the soul was there, and then your body begins to grow. Now, what causes, in other words, you're actually creating, that's a material creation, right? You as a living entity are creating a body. Not completely, you're not a complete controller, but you know, you have, in other words, there's an example of how matter is actually, material creation is coming from life. Because without the soul, there wouldn't be any growth, there wouldn't be any life, there's nothing. So it's the soul that animates the body, that brings everything into creation. And not just your body, but other things you might do. Especially as you're older, you might build something or build a house or do so many things. You might create all kinds of things. Our whole civilization has been created by people who are living entities, who are jiva souls, you know, who have a spiritual essence. And we see so much creation comes about from that. So similarly, all of this material energy originally comes from the Supreme Person. And just as we see that our body and so many things are created from our energy, this entire universe is created from the energy of the Lord, what to speak of the entire spiritual world and everything in existence. Okay, now the next point here is about who is the Supreme Controller. Because there's many controllers, but Krishna is the Supreme Controller, Krishna is the Absolute Truth. Now here's a question for you, and I know that we've been discouraged from asking too many questions that embarrass people or put people on the spot, but this is an easy one. This isn't about, you don't have to know any scripture for this or anything. Okay, let's talk about control in our own lives. Who has some control in your life? Who may control you to some degree? Who? Parents? Who else? Yeah? What? Teachers? Yeah, teachers have some control in your life. Anyone else? What's that? God. Well, yes, God has control in your life. Absolutely. Anybody more close that you recognize or, you know, you can notice, see right easily? Okay, for kids, how about some of the adults? Who else is, who's that? Someone else has some?
Your friends.
Your friends may have some control, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's called peer pressure, right? Yes, friends have some control. All right, and then as we get older, we may be controlled by governments. You're in the temple, you have temple managers or leaders, so many people. Now, are any of these people supreme? Are your parents a supreme controller? No. Are your teachers? Actually, not even your teachers are the supreme controllers. Okay. So, what about, what are you in control of? What's that?
Your actions.
You control your actions, yes. That was an excellent answer. We do have some control over how we act and how we behave. Anything else? What else can we control?
Attitude.
Our attitude? Yeah, we may control our attitude. Our behaviors, our thoughts, and we may have some little area of control, right? Right? I mean, you have control over your locker or your desk or something at school, right? We all have some area that we have some control over. But it's minor control, isn't it? It's not like we're controlling everything. I control my locker, therefore I'm control of the school. I'm control of, you know, Alachua. No, we have very small, minute control. Now, what about in the world? Who has much more control than we do? Who?
The president.
The president. Ah, president has a lot of control. Anyone else? Well, yeah. Anyway, we can see government leaders and stuff like that. But do they have supreme control? No, not really. I mean, there are, because there are many, many people who are in control, but they don't have absolute control. They have control over certain areas. In fact, Prabhupada says they're called Ishvaras. They have small control, but Krishna is the Parameshvara who has ultimate control. Sometimes he said this word, Vibhutiman. You know, they're like empowered. They have powers given by them by Krishna. So one thing that's mentioned here are the demigods. And many people feel that demigods are in control or they're like gods. So Prabhupada wants to mention it here. We're not talking about that. We're not talking about, you know, Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Indra. Because, yeah, they are Ishvaras. They're controllers, but they are not independent. So even the demigods are like department heads of Krishna, like under a CEO or the president. So the President of the United States has a cabinet, Department of Interior, Department of Education, and they're these cabinet ministers. So they're controlling this whole department, but they're appointed by the president and under his direction. Just like, I'll give a personal example. My older brother was in charge of the whole Department of Interior Natural Resources for the state of Alaska. So that's a big position because they have so much oil and forests and, you know, so many things. So he's in charge of this big department, but he's appointed by the governor. And what happened when the governor gets voted out, when someone else became governor? Does he have that job? Nope, gone. So in other words, it's very temporary. So demigods are like that too. They're appointed for a certain period of time. When that time period is over, like when there's annihilation or something like that, then they're gone and a new person comes in. So demigods, they are people, but they also hold a position. It's interesting. So like Indra is actually a position. There is a particular personality who has that position of being Indra, but in some other kalpa or some other time, a different person could be that Indra. So nobody has that complete, absolute control other than Krishna, other than the Param Satyam Absolute Truth. So even all the incarnations, think about Lord Nrisimhadeva and Lord Ramachandra and Kurma and Matsya and everyone. They also are dependent upon Krishna. They are all coming from Krishna. Later in the Bhagavatam, we'll hear of Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. But after all the incarnations are listed, it's stated that but Krishna is the original Bhagavan. That he is the original that all incarnations are coming from. So the Supreme Truth may have many energies, and these different energies may have different powers, may have different amounts of control, but he is always the Supreme. It's also mentioned that there are many energies. One of them that's been discussed here is the chit shakti, or the sambit potency, knowledge. And Prabhupada talks about how we all have some knowledge of our body or our immediate environment, but Krishna, as the super soul or the Paramatma, has knowledge of everything. He's conscious of past, present, and future. And Prabhupada gives the example of how much do we really know? We don't even know how our own body works, do we? We don't know how our food is being digested. We may learn some anatomy and have some theoretical idea, but are we even conscious of, you know, how we're digesting, how our endocrine system is working, how different things are being released out of the body, how chemicals release in the brain? We have no control over that. We don't even know exactly how it all works, but somehow it's all working. So we don't even have knowledge of our own body, but Krishna's Paramatma has knowledge of everybody, every single part of this creation. Srila Prabhupada explained that the Paramatma, the super soul, is within the heart of every living entity, also within every atom and between every atom. So it completely permeates this entire universe. So the Supreme has full consciousness. Finish this. There's a couple more lines, a couple of paragraphs here. Okay, we're going on in the modern age. In the modern age, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu preached the Srimad Bhagavatam by practical demonstration. It is easier to penetrate into the topics of the Srimad Bhagavatam through the medium of Sri Chaitanya's causeless mercy. Therefore, a short sketch of his life and precepts is inserted herein to help the reader understand the real merit of Srimad Bhagavatam. We're not going to read the short sketch of the life and teachings of Lord Chaitanya because it's about 40 pages. It's wonderful to read, but we don't have time. It's imperative that one learn the Srimad Bhagavatam from the person Bhagavatam. The person Bhagavatam is one whose very life is Srimad Bhagavatam in practice. Since Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the absolute personality of Godhead, he is both Bhagavan and Bhagavatam in person and in sound. Therefore, his process of approaching the Srimad Bhagavatam is practical for all people of this world. It was his wish that Srimad Bhagavatam be preached in every nook and corner of the world by those who happen to take their birth in India. The Srimad Bhagavatam is the science of Krishna, the absolute personality of Godhead, of whom we have preliminary information from the text of the Bhagavad Gita. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said that anyone, regardless of what he is, who is well-versed in the science of Krishna, Srimad Bhagavatam, and Bhagavad Gita, can become an authorized preacher or preceptor in the science of Krishna. There is a need for the science of Krishna in human society, for the good of all suffering humanity of the world. And we simply request the leaders of all nations to pick up the science of Krishna for their own good, for the good of society, and for the good of the world's people. So a very, very nice ending here to the purport. A couple points here that are important. First, that one should hear the Bhagavatam from the person Bhagavatam. So who is the person Bhagavatam? That is one who has perfectly realized the message of Bhagavatam, who is a pure servant of Krishna and purely understands devotional service and how to serve Krishna. That person is able to speak the Bhagavatam and affect the minds and hearts of others. There's a nice verse coming up in a couple chapters. A lot of us know Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, Prabhupada translates, by regular attendance and classes on the Srimad Bhagavatam, by rendering service to the pure devotee, then loving service to Krishna is established. So this Bhagavata Sevaya means to serve the Bhagavatam by hearing, and also to serve the person Bhagavat, the pure devotee, through devotional service. So, who is the person Bhagavatam? Any ideas?
Prabhupada.
Prabhupada. That was an easy one, right? Yes. We are very fortunate that we have the person Bhagavatam who has given us the translation and commentaries on the Bhagavatam. So, we have Prabhupada's purports, the person Bhagavatam, giving us the Srimad Bhagavatam, presenting Krishna to us as he is. Very difficult for us to understand Even though these scriptures are nicely written, nicely translated, it'd be very difficult to understand fully the philosophy of Krishna consciousness without help from the acharyas and from the guru. Very hard for us to understand on our own because we tend to interpret. For instance, this is more for the adults. How many of you read a Bhagavad Gita, a version of Bhagavad Gita, before you read Prabhupada's? No, I did. Anybody? A few people? Yeah, okay. And did you become a devotee of Krishna after reading those other versions? No, probably not. I was just a little bewildered by reading other versions. Oh, this sounds really nice, some flowery words, you know, about something about spiritual life, you know. And you know, I usually had no idea who Krishna was. But when Prabhupada translated and wrote his commentary on Bhagavad Gita, I remember when I read that, I immediately felt, this is the truth. These are the answers. This is the answer to life's problems. Why? And why did that touch my heart where the others didn't? Because it was explained and written by the pure devotee. So the realization of the pure devotee comes through and gives us some of that realization to understand the person, Bhagavata, and understand Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So I was thinking of another example. I was hearing something the other day about something about Allen Ginsberg, you know, who was chanting Hare Krishna. It was very favorable to Prabhupada and our movement and helpful. But he actually went to India, came to America before Prabhupada did, a year or two before Prabhupada came to America, and he was actually chanting Hare Krishna. How many devotees of Krishna do you think he made when he came and chanted Hare Krishna? I think the answer is probably zero. Isn't it? Heard of Shannon. Did he come up with a devotee? After he met Prabhupada and read Prabhupada's books, yes. When Prabhupada came and chanted, many, many people came, became devotees. This is the power of the realized devotee. And finally, Prabhupada concludes here that the very best exemplar and teacher of the Srimad Bhagavatam was Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to this world 500 years ago and not only gave us the chanting of the holy name, which we obviously know that he propagated chanting of Hare Krishna, but he also talked about the Srimad Bhagavatam and quoted the Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, and his disciples wrote about the Srimad Bhagavatam continually. You know, Srimad Bhagavatam is just inextricably linked with Vaishnavism and particularly Gaudiya Vaishnavam of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Someone was mentioning in class the other day, or when you read like the six Goswamis' books, who were the direct disciples instructed and taught by Lord Chaitanya, when you read the Jiva Goswami Sandarbhas or Rupa Goswami or any Sanatana Goswami, their source of information is Srimad Bhagavatam, isn't it? They quote Bhagavatam over and over and over again. And they say, and this is understood and explained, or this is proven by Srimad Bhagavatam. So this Bhagavatam was so important. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu emphasized it so much, you know, that we have to study the Bhagavatam and we have to chant the holy name. So by receiving the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, we can understand. Prabhupada said here, it's easier to penetrate topics of Srimad Bhagavatam through the medium of Lord Chaitanya's mercy. So that's what we need. We need Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda's mercy. We need Srila Prabhupada's mercy, our Guru's mercy. And that way, we can understand this philosophy. It's not just an intellectual pursuit. It's not just a matter of, well, I read these books, you know, I can repeat, I can even learn some verses, I can repeat some shlokas, and I'll become realized. No. It really is a matter of, by service and by chanting, it's a matter of realization from the heart. So it's the heart that really needs to be purified and awakened. And that's what this Bhagavat Sevaya does. Hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, serving the pure devotees, serving the mission of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, cleanses the heart of all the dust accumulated for years together. And thus we're able to understand the philosophy. It becomes clear. It becomes more and more clear. Works together. So when the heart is purified and awakened by this pure service, we can have this realization of the Param Satya, the absolute truth. I've got about one more minute. So what I would like to do, okay. I don't have much time. I was going to read the Sanskrit, but it's good English. These are some nice verses that I learned that I did not know before, but Mother Agamaka read these the other day from Krishna Lila Stava by Sanatana Goswami. Isn't that what you read? Wasn't it? You know, these are so beautiful about the Bhagavatam. So this is kind of like off the intellectual platform, and now this is really like more from the heart, okay? O Srimad Bhagavatam, O nectar churned from the ocean of all Vedic scriptures, O most prominent transcendental fruit of all the Vedas, O you who are enriched with the jewels of all spiritual philosophical conclusion, O you who grant spiritual vision to all the people of the world, O life breath of the Vaishnava devotees, O Lord, you are the sun that has arisen to dispel darkness of Kali Yuga. You are actually Lord Krishna, who has returned among us. Bhagavatam is not different than Krishna. O Srimad Bhagavatam, I offer my respectful obeisances to you. By reading you, one attains transcendental bliss, for your syllables rain pure love of God upon the reader. You are always to be served by everyone, and you are an incarnation of Lord Krishna. O Srimad Bhagavatam, O giver of saintliness to the unsaintly, O uplifter of the very fallen, please don't ever leave me. Please become manifest in my heart and my throat, accompanied by pure love of Krishna. Jai. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. I think this is the cue for the kids to all get up and rustle around. And while they're doing that, are there any questions or additions, comments?
I have a question.
Go ahead, Rangavinda.
God is the supreme controller. Does his controllership means that whatever we do, he is controlling and also compelling us. What we want to do, then we should not be accountable for anything, since he is the supreme controller.
He is the supreme controller, but we are also have small amounts of control. God is has infinite control, we have infinitesimal control. So where is our level of control? We have that small amount of free will. The free will is to decide to serve Krishna or not to serve Krishna. So that is our decision. So we are responsible for that. And thus we create karma, right? By our actions, we have responsibility and we enjoy or suffer the reactions.
Good.
Okay, Rikatmika?
There is a popular person, a Mayavadi, who is on the in the media and travels around the world. He promotes celibacy, vegetarianism, and so many similar principles, and no intoxication. I'm wondering, is he doing more harm than good? Is he affecting any good if he is impersonal? Because the conclusion is that God is just a stepping stone.
God is a stepping stone?
A stepping stone to the reality of...
to realize your own, that you're
all,
God, and yeah.
We're all one,
Is he doing more good than... Well, it depends. In other words, the Gyanis, kind of the impersonal laws can be in the mode of goodness, and they often have mode of goodness qualities, and so that in itself can be a stepping stone to further realization. The different probably made a distinction between impersonalism and Mayavadis, and we sometimes don't fully grasp that. But in other words, the impersonalist is one who's on the path of realization, and they are your most attractive. Their realization is about the impersonal, the Brahman, right, which is legitimate. The Mayavadi is one who actually thinks that when Krishna appears, it's just Maya. In other words, he has a material body, he's part of the material world, so they are offenders to Krishna. And Prabhupada was very much against the Mayavadis and very much condemned them. So it kind of depends upon what philosophical aspect they take. Because I guess a true Jnani impersonalist would appreciate the spiritual nature of Krishna, but is just attracted to the impersonal feature. I mean, I don't know. That's my understanding. Anyway, it's hard to say whether he's any more good. You know, now, if people are being led to mode of goodness, vegetarianism, things like that, then they are in a better position to then understand Krishna consciousness. So I guess to that degree, there's some good. I mean, it's better than having him in the mode of passion ignorance. Anything else?
First line you read, there is a distinction between the God and the Absolute Truth. Yeah. And you gave a very nice... I never thought that, because in Veda, they say there is a six kind of offense. And Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur says, if all the member of Gaudiya Math, if they don't have strong faith on these six things, they are not even member. And one of them was that Krishna is another God.
That Krishna is what?
Another God.
Another God.
Yeah.
We should have faith that Krishna is another God?
No, that's what the Hindus' idea is.
That's the mistake. That they think
yeah,
it's
that's
just
a
another
mistake.
God. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. No, that's true. And obviously Prabhupada is talking about that. And he was making a distinction between Ishvara and Parameshvara, the distinction between the demigods and Krishna. Yeah. Because a lot of his readers would have that misconception.
Until today, I mean, majority Hindu, they think Krishna is just saying...
Now we run into it all the time, don't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pervasive amongst Hindu society. Yeah. In fact, just real quick, I was doing several years ago, I was doing a program in Jacksonville, kind of regularly. We were setting up where I was coming like once a month and we were doing a Bhagavad Gita verse and like that. And there was one woman I'd seen for a long time and really nice and brought prasadam, you know, would cook and like chant and love to chant and everything. And so once I'm giving a class, and then she, in question time, she says something just absolute, you know, Mayavadi practically, like, well, this is really nice, but isn't it true that after we chant Hare Krishna and we realize, then we'll realize that we're all one, and, you know, and I was going to the complete, so I had to answer that. You know, and this is someone I thought was a devotee, a Vaishnava. And still, you know, that was, it's so pervasive, it's insidious, you know, that, you know, is so much within our culture. Our culture, it's also in Hindu culture. I mean, Prabhupada's, Nirvishesha Shunyavadi, come to dispel impersonalism and voidism. It's throughout the whole world, everywhere.
But then we see in the history, like Abraham or Muhammad, those days also polytheism was very, I was researching a little bit, polytheism was very prominent. Abraham, he established the so-called Christianity nowadays, that he established by demolishing all the gods and he establishing one, that's monotheism. But he thinks that to establish monotheism, he has to destroy all other competitive gods.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's not Gaudiya or
right.
our philosophy.
Right. Yeah, no, it's a problem, and that's why Prabhupada came, to give the truth, knowing that the world was filled with all these other philosophies that were leading people astray, you know. And Prabhupada is very strong about Mayavadi philosophy. You know, like I've said this many times before, if you really listen to Prabhupada and his conversations, he didn't attack Christians, he didn't attack other religions. There's really two classes of people that he really gave it to. One was materialistic scientists, who are misleading people, and Mayavadis, who are misleading people. Those were really his targets, weren't they?
Yeah.
Not the average person, like someone said the other day, 95% of the people are innocent, or people who are, you know, just trying to follow some religion. That's not the problem. It's these leaders who are philosophically misleading people. And that's what we need to combat. Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Yeah.